Dear Prabhupada.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Samsara Sagare Magnam Dinamam Karunanidhe Karma Grahya Grihitangam Mamudhara Bhavarnaval Srimal Bhagavadakhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi Svigrudo Simayanadha Muktartam Bhavasagare Manorathe Madhiyoyam Sabhala Sarvada Tvaya Nurvigdene Vagartavyam Dasoham Tavakeshavam Bhave Bhave Yada Bhakti Padayor Stava Jayade Tadha Kurushva Devesha Nadhastvanno Yada Prabho Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Babu Pranashanam Pranamo Dukha Shamanam Tam Namami Harim Param Janma Adhyasya Yadonvaya Didaradas Charteshva Vityaswaran Tene Brahma Hrda Ya Adhikavaye Mukhyandiyal Surayam Tejo Varimrudam Yathavinimayo Yatra Trisargo Mrishadhamna Svela Sada Nirastha Kuhagam Satyam Param Bhimahi Dharma Projida Kaidavotra Paramo Narmal Saranam Satam Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu Shivadam Tavatrayon Mulanam Srimal Bhagavade Mahamunigrade Kimvabare Ishwara Sadyo Hridhya Varudhya Detra Gridibhi Shushroshubhi Talshanal Nigamagalpadar Orgalidam Bhalam Shukamukhadam Rudadravasam Yudam Pipada Bhagavadam Rasamalayam Muhurahoresika Bhuvi Bhavugaham Sachidananda Rubaya Vishol Pratyadi Hedave Tabatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Mama Iyam Pravrajandam Anupedam Apedakrityam Dvaibayano Virahakadaram Ajuhavam Putredi Tanmayadaya Taravobhinidutam Sarvabhudahdayam Munim Anadosmi Yaswanu Bhavam Akhila Shudisarya Megam Adhyatma Deepam Aditi Dirshadam Tamondham Samsarinam Karunayah Purana Guhyam Tam Vyasa Sonam Upayami Guram Muninam Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Jaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayel Kamaniya Kishore Mugdhamurte Kalavenu Kunidadrudana Nindoho Mama Vaji Vijambhada Murare Madhurimna Kanikabi Kabi Kabi Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhudale Shrimade Bhakti Vedanda Swamin Idinamine Namaste Saraswati Devim Gauravani Prajarine Nurvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshadarini Srimal Gurucharanaravindabhyam Nama Vande Nandam Rajastrinam Padarenum Abhishnasha Yasam Harigado Gidam Punadi Bhuvanatrayam Gobi Charanaravindaparamanave Nama Pidambaram Karavirajita Chakrashangham Kaumodagi Sarasijam Karuna Samudram Radha Sahayam Atisundaram Andahasam Vadalayesha Manisham Hridibhavayami Komalam Kujayan Venum Shyamaloyam Kumaraka Vedavedhyaparam Brahma Bhasadam Puradomamam Mogam Karodi Vajalam Pangam Lenghayade Girim Yalkruvatamaham Vande Paramananda Madhavam Om Shri Krishnaya Nama. So we were discussing last Sunday from the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam the discussions between Bharata Yogeshwara and King Rahugana. So that is where we stopped last Sunday, and in the next few chapters, particularly the next two chapters, Bharata Yogeshwara, or Jatabharata as he was known then, but he is now recognized as a self-realized personality, or was already liberated in his material body. He is concluding his instructions to Rahugana. That is where it now begins. And the conclusion of the instructions was in a little different way than the normally other instructions were given. Particularly, while spiritual instructions are given to somebody, if that person is not properly achieved a certain degree of detachment to this material world or a certain degree of renunciation, such instructions may not be very, very helpful. To elucidate that or to prove that point, in this particular chapters, in the beginning itself, the necessity of renunciation is discussed. That is the interesting part of it, because unless there is certain degree of detachment to this material world, unless one understands the material world as a place of misery and distress and able to look beyond the material existence, it is difficult to capture the spiritual principles of life. One who is totally absorbed in the material way of life will find it very hard to accept that there is a higher dimension to life in the spiritual world, spiritual reality. And in material world is nothing but actually a replica of the spiritual world, but with all the distresses what is associated with that. So in order to prove that point, in the next chapter, Bharata Yogeshwara discussed with Rahugana about the necessity of understanding the material world. And that is why it is called in this chapter as Bhavadavi Varnanam. Bhavadavi Varnanam means the material world is considered to be like a deep forest. And the description of that forest is given here, which is titled in the Srimad Bhagavatam as the forest of enjoyment. So before we go into that, what has actually happened was that the Bharata Yogeshwara was talking to King Rahugana. And Rahugana, while listening to him, has understood that Bharata Yogeshwara was explaining some important points to him. And that is what we find. And ultimately, Bharata Yogeshwara told Rahugana that I will hand over this sword to you. Take this sword in your hand and walk through this world. That is how he explained. Jnanasino bhasadaya shidenam. That asi means a sword. Jnana means knowledge. This sword of knowledge you should carry with you all the time. Jnanasino bhasadaya shidenam. That if you have this sword in hand, just like when you go into a forest, you should have some weapon with you to protect yourself from the enemies and also to help you in your journey through. So therefore, Rahugana was given this sword by Bharata Yogeshwara. But at the same time, he told certain things which are very, very important instructions what Bharata Yogeshwara mentioned to Rahugana. He told him that it is no point in having a sword in your hand if you don't know how to keep that sword very sharp, how to use that sword and how to keep it in a sharp condition. Just like sometimes you can see that in drama, for example, when a king enters, he enters sometimes with a sword attached to him on his belt. He has a sword hanging from his belt. And the audience who sees the king coming into the stage, he sees the sword shining, which is attached to his belt, which is shining, and the whole makeup of the stage and the lighting system and the sword what he is holding gives an impression that he carries a real sword with him. So once it so happened, a boy who was watching a drama, he went up and he was watching this drama a long time, and he got fascinated with the sword what he was carrying, the king was holding with him. And the boy wanted to find out and get hold of that sword. He wanted to he was very enthusiastic. He was not too concerned about the drama, what the theme was or what was going on. He was only 5 or 6 years old. He was attracted by the makeup, the dress, and ultimately the sword. Generally, the boys have a tendency also, if you know very well, boys likes this knife, sword, guns, and things like that. The girls, they like something different. They are not interested in all these kind of things. But boys' tendency is always, if you give them for their birthday a nice present of a good knife, they will really adore you. They will appreciate that present, what you give it to them. It's just the nature of that boy's nature. But so this particular boy was fascinated with the sword. So as soon as the drama was finished, he went back to the dressing room to find out where this sword is. He wanted to get hold of it and look at it. But unfortunately, when he went there, the actors were changing their dress, and they told him to get out of the place and keep away from them. But he won't leave them. He kept on insisting that he wanted to have a look at it. So eventually, seeing his insistence and his determination, one of the persons who have dressed up in the drama, he told somebody else, get hold of that sword from my box and show it to him. I folded it and kept it there, he said. So the other person brought out the sword and showed it to this boy. It was nothing but made of cardboard and covered with some gilt paper. And altogether in the light and all, it was shining like very well. And the boy thought that it is a real sword. So he was thinking, he was very impressed with the sword. So he started asking, is this the sword what you are wearing? The boy was asking him. So, well, then he said, this sword is no use to me, and he left the scene. So similarly, if you have a sword like that, it is no use. But you have to have a sword which is sharp enough to cut through the forest or to get your way through. So what I'm trying to say is that jnanam is good. Jnanam is necessary in spiritual life. Jnanam knowledge is essential. But if that knowledge is always supported by upasana, upasana means the sadhana or the one's own spiritual activity, that jnanam will not help. This is what the conclusion is. That is why he said to him, I give you this sword, but this sword of knowledge, but unless you sharpen it every time with upasana and sadhana, unless you do that, this jnanam will not come helpful. To illustrate that point, in that next thing, what he did was, that I've given you this sword, now with this sword, you can walk through this forest. Now what is this forest? The forest is considered to be nothing but our material life in this world. It is described in a language which was understandable for Rahugana by Bharata Yogeshwara. In such a way he described that Rahugana captured the message very nicely. So instead of directly telling him that this is how the material world is, the whole thing was put in the perspective in the background of a forest. Just like samsara means, we sing the song, samsara dhava nanalita loga. That samsara means actually all our experiences from the time of birth right up to the time of death. This is what is known as material existence or samsaram. So living entity, when he changes his body, from the birth to death and death to birth again, that is another set of experiences. But this set of experiences from birth to death, jananam to death, the mruti stage or maranam, up to that point, whatever one experiences in this material world is known as samsaram in Sanskrit. So this samsaram is compared to a forest. And if you look at the analogy, you will see how appropriate the whole thing is. Because when you enter into a deep forest, actually you do not know where you are. This is your situation. You get into the forest and the forest is so thick, it is completely covered on the top with the trees and the leaves, everything. Even the sunshine won't come in. That's how deep the forest is. And it's not our situation also here. Actually, none of us know where we came from. We know that we got this material body through our parents, father and mother. But apart from that, we have no understanding what's our real situation is. In other words, sincerely, the situation is like in a forest, in a deep forest. We have no understanding of our actual position. What are we? We have no idea. Where we have come from, we don't know. Where we are going, nor do we know that. So in this situation, we are in this material world. And this material world, we are trying to laud it over the material nature. as the normal tendency is, not knowing where we came from or where we are going, exactly in the typical situation in a deep forest. In addition to that, in the forest, you have so many enemies you have to deal with. For example, the wild animals which comes to attack you in the forest, they are already there. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while discussing this, Bharatayogeshwara compared to a forest, and later on, Sri Shukan spoke all these things to Parikshit Maharaj. And when he explained that to, when he spoke the same verses, what was spoken by Bharatayogeshwara to Rahugana, when they were repeated by Sri Shukan to Parikshit, Parikshit could not get the whole point very clearly in his mind. He could not fully understand. So because of that, in another chapter, he explained that little bit more in depth so that he could understand it properly. In other words, instead of directly telling about material life in its pure form or actual form, he put it in this way, in a very diplomatic way, through the comparison with the forest. That's why it's called the forest of enjoyment. And the reason for that is that if you say what is explained there, and if it is elaborated, if you explain it in detail, it is not very pleasant to hear, because it's our own story, that is what is spoken there, and that is why it's so unpleasant. And because of this, generally, most of the speakers from Srimad Bhagavatam do not go into too much of explanation of that, because it creates an uneasiness in our own mind when we hear through this next chapter. And although it is true, because illusion helps us to maintain some sanity in this world, because we accept this material world to some degree as a reality, and we are able to keep doing things in this world and to maintain people, otherwise people will completely give up their karma or their responsibility, and they'll become engaged in a desperate situation. So not to avoid that, there are a lot of things mentioned in that chapter, and there is a lot of explanation also to that. In fact, some people say that it can be discussed for something like 8 to 10 days. If you start going through this, if you speak about 5 or 6 hours every day, you can talk about something like 40 to 50 hours on the same topic, what has been covered by Bharatayogeshwara discussions with Rahugana. But for our quick understanding, just a simple way to put it is that in the forest is considered to be our life dangerous, and our passage through this material world is also similar to the existence in the forest. So, just like in the forest, wild animals come and attack us, a householder life in this world is similar to that. A householder experiences so much distresses in this world, and whomever he considers as his own part and parcel, or his own kith and kin, or whomever he considers as his expansions, or whatever you like it, it is the very same expansions from the Shastric point of view is considered to be compared to wolves and foxes. That is how they are compared. And it is true, for men it's women, and for women it is man. That is how the comparison is. The reason being that householder struggles very hard in all his life to earn money, to earn wealth. And at the very end of his working life, after retirement, he wants to have some peaceful life. But householder never gets peace any time in his life. This is the fact. From beginning to end, it's just patching up things, adjusting this and adjusting that. It goes on from beginning to end. So that's how the householder life is. So here, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to that, it's considered that the people who are with him, with the householder, like wife and children and all, they're considered compared to wolves. Why they're compared to wolves? Because some of the things what happens to us in this life is very much similar to that. Like, for example, most of the animals in the forest, like tigers, lions and all other animals, they first kill their prey. They kill them and then they eat them. But the wolves, they don't do that. A pack of them will come and start eating its prey straight away. They won't even wait to kill the prey. That is how they eat them. So because of this, wolves are considered to be more merciless than the tigers or the lions or any other wild animal. For this reason only, that a pack of them will jump on you and they'll start eating you straight away. They don't have time to kill you, because they are thinking that in the process of eating you'll be killed anyway. So what's the need to kill you? So unfortunately, this comparison is given here in the Bhagavatam as the life of a householder with his wife and children. That the wife and children are referred to in that way in the Bhagavatam as nothing but wolves. Please do not misunderstand Sudeva Goswami for saying this, because in reality this is the situation. It is not only from, of course, in the modern world it's a little different. This is talking about the Vedic times where the family depended on the husband. But today husband is working, wife is working. So you can consider that both are wolves in one way or the other. If you take in reality, the spirit is like that. That one wolf is eating the other, that's all. That's the way it is. So generally in the Bhagavatam referring to this, it says here that this person cannot see that all his so-called his friends, relatives, society, what he has built up around him is nothing but a pack of wolves which are ready to eat him at any time. This is the so-called friendship and society in this material world, and that is not going to change. It's always been like that. So therefore in the Bhagavatam, Sri Shukan says to Parikshit Maharaj that this is your situation in this material world. Generally, normally a householder, after earning, so may say 30 years or 35 years, if he has worked very hard, earned some money, and then when he retires, he thinks that, okay, I will have some now, few years before I die, some peaceful existence in this world. Or if he is a little bit Krishna conscious or is interested in God consciousness, he will think of using that time for preparing for his death or in spiritual activities. That is normally a householder will think. But unfortunately what happens is that householder may be ready for retirement and spiritual life and all that. But if the wife and the children are not ready for it, they want to continue their material activities, then it becomes a little bit disturbing and pain for the householder. For the householder finds it very difficult. So sometimes he is becoming careful with his money because he is not earning anymore. So he becomes cautious about his wealth, what he has acquired. So, but if the wife is sharing the same credit card with the husband, the wife goes and spends freely. She uses the credit card and pays all what she wants and buys it. And in the end of the month, when the credit card, the statement comes from Visa or Axis or anybody, the old man is sitting there looking at it, the whole list, and he starts checking very carefully because now he has got the time to check and he's not earning anything. So he has more time to check it. So he starts going item by item, and then he finds that there are so many things which we could avoid not having in this house. So the old man is thinking like that and he calls his wife. But when he calls her, she is not in a good mood to listen anything because she is not used to all these calculations and checking the statements. She was just used to getting it paid straight away direct debit. So she is used to direct debit system. She doesn't want all this hassle. So, but here the old man is concerned very much, what's going to happen to me because my income has dropped, pension is only so little, if he has got a pension. But if he hasn't got a pension, then it is much more concern, he has to be. But whatever it is, the man is concerned, but the family is not concerned because they are still continuing their life in the same way. So you can see the difficulty where it comes, that if you have a desire for spiritual life, sometimes if you are still getting entangled in material life, at some point in time, the very material life will always disturb your spiritual plans or spiritual ideas you want to practice in. So he calls her and then looks at her face and see if she is alright to talk to now. Because he is frightened, if I say something, what could be the response? So in a fearful mood, he picks up the statement and starts questioning one after the other what he thought was unnecessary to buy. But she immediately reacts very strongly to it, saying that, don't you realize that we need all these things? How do you expect me to continue doing this, that and the other? So he keeps quiet. Best thing is not to open the complaint book. If you open it, it's then you had it for the rest of the life. So best thing is to keep it closed, keep quietly and chant Hare Krishna and pass your time. So that is the solution to that. There is no other solution to it. So this is the situation of most of us. I mean, it is no point in trying to cover it up and think that everything is wonderful in family life, and family life is an excellent lifestyle. But there is some peace if you get, if you have a partner. That's the best way to use it today, because you don't know which side of the side is earning the money and which side is Krishna conscious and which side is not. But if you get a partner who is Krishna conscious, who understands the principles of Krishna consciousness, to some degree you can minimize this misery. To some degree you can minimize it, because Krishna consciousness principles will help in one's attitude in life, and to understand it from the Shastri point of view. So anyway, these things do happen. But this, if this is the story at the house, if you think about you going to the forest, what happens? In the forest, there is so many other things happening. What you are trying to go through, this material world is compared to a forest. This forest of enjoyment, you are trying to enjoy in middle of all these problems. We are talking about a society where things are much more strict and much more organized. In other words, where normally people got married at a certain stage and lived a family life to the rest of their life, and they peacefully died and left this world. This is the type of society we are talking about. But in the modern society, even these rules you can't apply, because it's so complex now. That is how things have changed. In modern society, we don't even know how many times we will have difficulties in our life, in married life, as well as in our relationships with people, because it has become so difficult. So, but none of the material distresses mentioned in the Bhagavatam has gone away. Everything is still there, only thing to a much higher degree. It has increased in a much larger scale. So what happens is that when you are going through the forest, of this so-called forest, sometimes you can meet with an elephant. These are all comparisons given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that you suddenly meet with an elephant. An elephant is dangerous when he is alone. When one elephant on its own comes, then he is very dangerous. That is the nature of the elephant community. When they are in a group and they travel in the forest, they don't give you trouble. They will keep to themselves and go. But as soon as you find a single elephant on its own, moving around in the forest, he is considered to be very dangerous. So the elephant has come to get him, but at that time he is thinking, he saw a big creeper going around a tree, going up. He went and held on to that creeper. So when he held on to that creeper, he is thinking that I will be protected from the elephant. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned, Vallim grihitvam gajameva mastidaha, that Valim Grihitva, he holding on to this Vali or this creeper, and he is thinking that I'll be protected from the elephant. He's thinking like that. But does the elephant care? Elephant comes, he pulls the man and the creeper, everything together, and smashes it on the ground. That is how the elephants are. Valim Grihitva Gajabidam Astidaha, that frightened of Gajam, frightened of the elephant, he's holding on to this creeper and trying to protect himself. This is what he tries to do. So from this you can see that you cannot escape from the elephant simply by holding on to a creeper. Valim grihitva gajabidam astidaha. Why did Sri Sukadeva Goswami or Bharata Yogeshwar say this to Rahugana? There is a reason behind it. And if you see the comparison of that to our life, you will be amazed what an amount of foresight Bharata Yogeshwar had about us. Generally, people, they get frightened in life. At some point in life, one gets frightened. And the highest fear in life is at the time of death. Death is the time when you get maximum fear in your mind. And that will come at that time. As much as you are aware that the end is coming, or the time is coming closer and closer, immediately inside your own mind, somebody will tell you, you get an impression that soon I have to leave this body. So normally what happens is that this I'm talking about in the modern world, that the husband and the wife, when they are very attached together, very close, they spend a long time together, 40 years, 50 years, sometime golden jubilee, they have celebrated. So at the time of death, the man is, it applies to both sides, both well as well as man and woman, because we are equal opportunity, aren't we? So we have to keep that in that perspective. So the man is saying to his wife that I'm very frightened, I'm feeling very fearful. So please come and sit down next to me, he says to her. And please hold my hand, he says to her, because of the fear inside. This is all common, this is not nothing new thing found out. It's always happening in this world, either in the hospital or home, wherever you are dying, all these things can happen. So he holds her hand, thinking that if I hold her hand, probably I'll feel some sort of fearlessness, I'll feel some security, and I'll also feel a freedom from, a little bit relief from the fear of death. This is what is giving him that strength. So he holds her hand, or she holds his hand, whichever way it is. But Bhagavatam says there that if you hold the hand, you have to hold somebody's hand, a hand that can protect you. Otherwise, if you hold somebody's hand, in the Sanskrit language, marriage has got a very many, many names. And one of the names given to marriage is Panigrahanam. Panigrahanam means holding the husband hold the wife's hand and walk around. That holding the hand is considered to be the first ritual in the marriage. So he holds the hand of the wife and thinking, once he has done that at the time of marriage, now after 40, 50 years, at the time of death, he is holding a second time again. Because when he held the hand of the wife first time, he was thinking that I'm going to look after her, you'll be my partner in my life, all these glorious promises has happened then. And now, at the time of death, he's again holding on to that hand. But at this point in time, that hand cannot help you. Because he's thinking that hand will help him, or she is thinking that his hand will help her. But that hand cannot help you. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam says. To illustrate this point, there are so many incidents in the history. And it is nice to know that sometimes what will help us at the time of death. So, in Tamil language, when they say, they will use the word Tiru to many places. That means wherever there are many major temples or holy places or holy personalities, they will always use the word Tiru. It is the same word as Shri in Sanskrit. For example, Tirupati, that is the place where Lord Venkateshwara is there. Tiruvatar, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found the Brahma Sutram. Then there is Tirutani and also Tiruchandur. There are so many places like that. So there is a place called Tiru Shiva Peru. That was the original name of that town. And in that town, Tiru Shiva Peru, there is a very, very famous temple of Lord Shiva right in the middle of the town. And surrounding this temple, hundreds and hundreds of acres of land belongs to this temple. It's a very big temple, and there's a lot of land around it which belonged to this temple for a very, very long time. It is such a time immemorial that temple has been existing. And now in the modern times, what has happened is all around this temple and this land around, they have built a road, and all the businesses, shops and everything is built around this whole vacant land. So it's something like about 400-500 acres of land right in the middle of the city, which is vacant, and middle of that 500 acres of land is this big temple existing. And the place is known as Tiru Shiva Peru. So in that place, there was many years ago, not long ago, about 100 years or so, there was a what is known as a mathas were built, like Gaudiya Math, there was maths belonging to other acharyas. They built maths there. And normally in these maths, sannyasis and brahmacharis live. That's their place of residence. Maths are meant for that. Sannyasis live and sannyasis perform their daily puja and daily duties and studying and performing all the other sadhana involved. And brahmacharis' duty is to learn from the sannyasis. And brahmacharis were trained up by the sannyasis. But normally people who come to these mutts will be very, very old people. They are normally after spending their lifetime in studying and and performing various spiritual activities, they will come back to retire and spend. When they become totally helpless to travel around, they will stay in these muds. And generally, there will be some brahmacharis who will help them in their daily life, particularly with their daily needs. So, in this one of these muds, which was not far from this temple, there was one sannyasi who lived there. And this sannyasi was probably 90 or 93 years old. He was quite an old person. But although he was 93 years, he had a lifestyle which he lived was so Krishna conscious that he had a brahmachari assistant with him to help him to daily visit to this temple where he recited the Rig Veda. It was because he belonged to the Rig Vedic tradition of the Brahmanas. So generally they will recite all the Rig Vedic mantras regular basis. He did that. So every day about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, the brahmachari used to take him to the temple from the mud, which was somewhere around about a kilometer distance from the mud to the temple where he had to go. So brahmachari was very happy to do that because through the association of this saintly personality, brahmachari was developing his spiritual life. His only desire was to please him and receive his mercy. What we discussed in the last class, Vinamahalpada Rajobhishekam. This is Vinamahalpada Rajobhishekam. Serving somebody with loyalty and with sincerity, a sannyasi like that, who are very advanced in age, advanced in knowledge, advanced in experience, advanced in realizations, everything. And if that person at some point in time thinks, let this brahmachari have the realizations of all what he has studied, at that point the realization will come to him automatically. So that is the secret of spiritual life, that he was willing to serve the sannyasi with a completely dedicated mind and wanted to serve him so much that he was receiving the spiritual benefit from that. So he was doing that. So this was the system all the time. If you look into all the other mutts also, Shankaracharya's mutts, Ramanujacharya's mutts, all the great acharyas, they created these mutts only for this purpose, for the sannyasis and the brahmacharis to live, and brahmacharis served the sannyasis and the sannyasis got the assistance from them. So in this particular instance, what happened was one day morning, he was going to the temple and brahmachari, he couldn't even see properly, his eyes were all, his eyesight has really been gone virtually, but with the help of the brahmachari, he was walking towards the temple. He couldn't even see properly. His ears have gone deaf and he is so old that due to the, he couldn't hear anything. Anything you tell him, he will say, what is it, what is it? He will ask again and again, three or four times, till he understands what it is. So anyway, the brahmachari was taking him to the temple. So somewhere halfway, they suddenly saw a group of people running everywhere. They were running around in all directions. He noticed that and he started asking the brahmachari, what is going on? What's the problem? He said. So brahmachari also could not straight away answer. But then suddenly someone came on the way and said to them that if you want life, run away from here. Because one of the elephants who belonged to this temple had hundreds of elephants that time maintained by the temple. One of them has got what is known as the musk, that they become uncontrolled. Liquid starts coming flowing from their forehead and they start acting like mad. That means they are out of control. So the elephant keeper, the mahout, also cannot control him anymore because it's an awkward situation. So the young brahmachari told the old man, old sannyasi, that I am told that this elephant is lost control and he is running around and he's telling us that we should go and escape somewhere. So the young brahmachari was in a dilemma, what to do now? The old person, he can't run, he can't walk, he can't even carry him because he was a heavy person at the same time. Brahmachari wasn't that strong. So brahmachari mentioned this to him. So immediately the old sannyasi told him, you should go now, you go and run from here and escape from here. I said. Brahmachari said to him, how can I do that? I have come to serve you, and if you ask me to go away now in this condition, it doesn't look very nice if I do that and anything happens to you. So the sannyasi told brahmachari that no, you should not insist on that because I am an old man. If anything happens to me, is there much to lose? But you should go. He kept saying, in requesting him in a nice way. But Brahmachari again kept insisting, no, I cannot do that. If I do that, anything happens, I will be very disheartened tomorrow. So if anything happens, I will be very upset. So let me rather stay with you and we will try to walk as fast as we can and escape from here. At that point, the old sannyasi told him that I have told you to go. I don't want to see you here. You have got your mother, father, brothers, sisters, and you are a young person. And if you keep insisting here, I don't want to see you here, go right away from here. He started ordering him. To that extent, he forced him to leave. Brahmachari, out of his pressure from the sannyasi, he ran away from there, climbed onto some tree and sat on top of the tree, seeing what will happen now, waiting for the elephant, if it comes, what happens, let me see. He was sitting there and the old person quietly sat down on the ground, on a stone or something which was lying there. He sat on top of it. He said, let me finish this whole thing. If elephant comes, see what happens. He sat there. Hardly 5 minutes had gone before that, the elephant came that way. And people were gone away, most of the people have ran away from there, there is nobody. The Brahmachari is sitting on the tree and the sannyasi is sitting on the ground, on top of this, on the stone. So when he came running, already he was, the elephant was making as much noise as it could. At the same time, this liquid was flowing from his top. And when he came, he could see that on both the both the tusk, it was full of blood, because by now he has already killed two or three people, and that is how he was coming in that mood. And when he came closer to this old man, he saw there the old man sitting there, and this elephant got closer and closer. The old man lifted his hand and showed it to him like this. He just showed his hand to the elephant like this. And he spoke to the elephant. Elephants are intelligent animals. They can understand a lot of things what human beings converse each other. They have that understanding. So what he lifted his hand and told him. As soon as he saw the elephant, the old man knew the name of the elephant, because normally in those days, every temple has many elephants and all the local people will know the names of all the elephants which the temple keeps. That is how their lifestyle was. They don't run away all around the world. They live there. And they know everything what goes on in the temple. So he knew which particular elephant this elephant was. And as soon as he saw the elephant, he told the elephant, my dear Ramchandra, Ramchandra was his name. Do you know this? He said, showed his hand and told him, for 90 years I served Lord Narsimhadev with this hand. And this is that hand. He said, showed it to him like this, to Ramachandra, the elephant. He showed his hand like this and told him, for 90 years, I have been serving Narasimhamurti, with this hand. And what do you want to do? He said. As soon as he saw the hand, the elephant fell there, passed urine and stool at the same time, and walked away from there. So for us, it may look strange, but actually, what the elephant saw on that hand was nothing. It was the face of Narasimhadev. That's what he saw on the hand. Tatta swarna suvarna ghurnam dadirukshaksham sadakesaram polkamba pranikumbidambaram aho jiyata vedam babum vyaptam vyaptamahadari samaham valgogra valgan mahajikhva nargamadrishyamana sumaha damshta yugodamaram. In the Narasimhamurti's form at the time of appearance is like this. Tapta swarna suvarna ghurnam, that if you have the molten gold, if it is melting out, and what is the color of that gold? Tapta swarna suvarna ghurnam dadirukshaksham sadakesara prulkamba pranikumbidambaramaho jiyalta vedam vabhum. That Narasimhamurti's face at the time of killing Hiranyakashipu was expressed like this, that it was so effulgent at that time, all the sada, all the mane, everything, what was looking so frightening. Vyapta vyapta mahadari sakamukham galgogra valgan maha jihva nurgama drashyamana sumaha damshta yugo damaram. That Hiranyakashipu held a hand and was looking into this fearful nature of the Narasimhamurti in that half-lion form, that Narasimhamurti jumped into that effulgence, and that's how he gets killed. So this elephant Ramachandra actually didn't see the hand, actually he saw Narasimhadev itself. What does it mean? It means that if you, at the time of death, what can protect you is a hand like this, not your wife's hand or husband's hand. Husband and wife can't protect you, because at the time of death, when the death comes, if you have a hand like this, which has served Krishna throughout, which has offered flowers to Krishna, which has chanted the holy name of Krishna, that hand can protect you. That's the only hand that can protect you. There is no other hand that can protect you. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam says. So if you want protection at the time of death, that this is the hand what one should take shelter. That is the hand which has served Krishna. Such a hand can protect him. So from this you can see that glorious Srimad Bhagavatam says there that many devotees recognize this fact. You will see there in so many instances, many great personalities have said that I have served Krishna, I have no fear about it. And that is their conclusion. And if they don't, if they accept that fact, Vilumangalam put that in the Krishna Karnavadam in a much nicer way. That one day somebody asked Vilumangalam, Swamiji, you are afraid of death? Vilumangalam said, no, why? Why should I be afraid of death? Why? His answer was, Devagi taneya pujana puda pudanari charano dagadaudam yadyaham smriti dhananjaya suda kim karishyati same yamadutah. Devagi taneya pujana puda. I have served Devagi's son, which is Krishna. I have served in my life. I have served with these hands Krishna, mother Devagi's son, which is Krishna. Devagi taneya pujana puda pudanari charano dhagadhaudam. That I have taken the charanamadam, I have taken the nectar which has washed pudanari charano dhagadhaudam. That pudanari is Krishna, one who has killed Pudana. And I have taken the charanamadam which was used for washing Krishna's lotus feet. Yadyaham smriti dhananjaya sudham. Every minute I am thinking about Arjuna's charioteer. Dhananjaya sudham. I have not thought about anybody else except the charioteer of Arjuna, who is Krishna. Yadyaham smriti dhananjaya sudha kim karishyati same yamadudam. Let me see when Yamaraja's agents, when they come here, let me see what they are going to tell me. I would like to hear that. Kim karishyati same yamadudam. That what will Yama's representatives will do to me? I would like to see that. He says there like this in the Krishna Karnavadam. So you can see that devotees who have advanced in Krishna consciousness, they have overcome the fear of death. It is they all alone who are free from this fear of death. Why? Because they have taken the complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, that has given them that strength to come out of this fear. Otherwise, every one of us, nobody has exception to that. Whether, no matter what position he is in this material world, at the time of death, the fear will come. And to escape from that fear, Srimad Bhagavatam says that one has to take the shelter of a personality like that. But otherwise, Mrityugaja Bhayal, that is Bhagavatam says, Mrityugajam, that means that elephant in the form of death will come. And when it comes, you may not be able to deal with that situation properly. So if one has to deal with that situation, Srimad Bhagavatam is saying there that if one take the shelter of a personality who has served Krishna and who has been fortunate enough to please Krishna by his activities, such a person will be sheltered by Krishna's mercy. That's the only way one can protect oneself. There is no other way. Therefore, while we were discussing this, Bharata Yogeshwara told Rahugana that jnanam is good, knowledge is good, but the knowledge, if it is not supplemented with upasana or sadhana, that knowledge will not become effective. How? Because to know something is good, but at the same time, if that knowledge has to give you the strength at the time of death to think about Krishna or to chant the holy name of Krishna, one has to chant the holy name today, and that is sadhana. That if one does not chant it today, thinking that, oh, I have understood all Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, I don't need to do anything anymore, it is not going to happen. It will be like that cardboard sword, it will stay there, it cannot be used. That is the situation with the knowledge. So any spiritual knowledge, what one has understood or developed or cultivated from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam or from any other Vedic literature, if that knowledge is not practiced in one's own life, and if one does not have had that training to continuously practice, for example, unless you chant the holy name all the time, it's necessary to chant. One may be put into different situations. Apart from, oh, if I chanted 16 rounds and I'm finished now, for my quota is over today, and leave it there. That is not what is necessary. It's necessary to chant it all the time. One should continuously chant the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So continuously if you chant this, not stopping any time, whether you are working, you are traveling, or you are doing any other business, if you continuously chant like this, it will become a habit automatically. And if you do that, throughout life, if you continue doing that, without waiting for the death to come, automatically at the time of death, even if you had not had the energy or efficiency or ability to do it, automatically the lips will start doing that its work. The mind will go in that direction. And the holy name alone is the only protection in this world, in this age. There is no other protection. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gadiranyatam. There is no other shelter. Krishna says this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says the same thing, that unless one chants Hare Krishna throughout life, non-stop, continuously chanting, if one is not able to chant with the beats back all the time, even if one chants a couple of hours in the morning, still one should chant as much time as possible, as much one is aloof from the society and from the people, if he wants to be protected by the holy name. Krishna's name is the protection at that point. There is no other protection. Otherwise, if one holds on to wife's hand and husband's hand, thinking that will protect me at the time of death, that is, Srimad Bhagavatam says there, that considers to be the forest of enjoyment. There is no shelter. The shelter is Krishna's holy name, nothing else. So therefore, it is better not to keep it till the age of 88, like Ajamila did. It is better to start doing it today, before the time is too late. And that is the message in the Srimad Bhagavatam. After speaking all these things to Rahugana, Bharata Yogeshwara looked at Rahugana's face and told him that, I hope you are understanding what the message I have told you. Rahugana started thinking very seriously that what was lacking in him, he started realizing. He had well read, he has studied all the books, everything. But because this sadhana or upasana and service to a great devotee was missing in his life, at that point in time, Bharata Yogeshwara explained some more things. Aham vira bharato nama rajam vimukta drishta shuddha sanga bandha aradhanam bhagavani hamano mrugobhava mruga sangha dhatartam. That I was, in my earlier life, I was called as King Emperor Bharata. He was saying, aham vira bharato nama rajam. I was called as Emperor Bharata, he says there. Vimukta drishta shuddha sanga bandhaha. Then, due to my association, I fell down from that position of a human life to the life of a deer. This is how he puts it. The life of a deer. Vimukta drishta shuddha sanga bandha aradhanam bhagavata ihamanum mrugam bhava mruga sangha dadartham. That I have become an animal. Aradhanam bhagavata ihamanu. But what did I do? I did something in my body of a Bharata, Emperor Bharata. As soon as he said Emperor Bharata, Rahugana was a bit shaken by realizing he was only a small king, he was not an emperor or anything. So Rahugana was a bit frightened. Realizing that Rahugana was frightened, Bharata Maharaj immediately told him, don't get frightened about it, because I'll explain to you. You are thinking you are the king, Rahugana. You are thinking you are the king. But when I look at you, all I find is your eyes, ears, nose, throat, hands, legs and everything. But where is the king? If you put all these things together, that also makes it only a material body, nothing else. Where is the king in there? It is only what you are thinking that you are a king, because people have told you that you are a king and you are thinking you are very special. And you start thinking like this, and eventually it becomes your habit to identify yourself with the king. Exactly like I was identifying as Emperor Bharata. This is how I was identifying, he said. But that body, I left it there and it was finished. I am not anymore Emperor Bharata. Aham vira bharato namarajam vimutta drishtashura sangabandhaham aradhanam bhagavata ihamano mrugo bhava mrugasangha dadartam. That I became an animal. I fell down from Emperor Bharata to a deer. And then in my next life, I got this Brahmana's body. And today, I am wandering in this world unattached to anything, completely detached to everything in this world, because I learned this lesson. Mrugo bhava mrugasangha dadatam. That because of my association with one deer, I had to accept the body of a deer. And now I've got this body, I don't want to continue this business anymore. And I want to put an end to it. And I'm hoping that as soon as I leave this body, I'm not going to come back here accepting another body again. Hearing all this lecture, all the speeches, what he has talked about, Rahugana was immediately felt that there is no need for me to go to Kapilashram, Kapila Muni's ashram. Here is my spiritual master. He fell down at his feet straight away and asked for his mercy and prayed to him. Whatever you have spoken to me, it has made me to realize what my real identity is, what my actual position is. And please bless me with your hands so that all what you have spoken, it will manifest in me. And it was at that time that Bharata Yogeshwara put both his hands on Rahugana and told him that whatever you heard from me, let this knowledge manifest in you. And he gave that mercy to Rahugana. And it was at that time, earlier you've seen Bharata Yogeshwara was a realized soul, completely liberated. And now we have Rahugana, who is totally liberated now by the mercy of Bharata Yogeshwara. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it says there, at that point in time, they present these two liberated souls together standing side by side, and we don't know whether they went in two different directions or they went in the same direction. There that story ends. And that is the story of Bharata Maharaj. Bharata Maharaj's story of changing body from one to another and the circumstances he had to go through, all these things. All these things are covered in that chapters. And eventually Bharata Maharaj and the two self-realized souls, completely realized, fully realized, no more in attachment to this material body. Both Bharata Yogeshwara and Rahugana left the scene and walked away. And there, while leaving, Rahugana has a few words to say about King Bharata. About Bharata Yogeshwara, he said that, I do not know what is my good fortune to come to this situation. What good fortune? Because such souls are very, very rare in this world. And to get to the association of such persons, through their mercy alone, one can free oneself from this ignorant situation. And they are very, very rare. But I must have done something. I have pleased Krishna that I have got this opportunity. And he pays obeisances to everybody at that point. Because at that time, the duality of the material world has completely gone away from his mind. And he pays obeisances to the children, to the babies, to the brahmanas, to brahmacharis, everybody he pays his obeisances. And he says there, I pay my obeisances to everyone, and for this realization, what I received from Bharata Yogeshwara. And that's where that finishes. So I'll just read this few couple of chapters, and then we'll move on to the next story of the description of the Jambudvipa. Canto, chapter 11. Brahmana vacham. Yavan manorajasa purushasya satvena vatamasavanurudham chedo biragudi biradanodi nirangusham kushalam chedanam vam
సవాసనాల్మా విషయో విరక్తో గుణ ప్రవాహో విరుద షోడశాల్మా విభ్రల్ ప్రణంగామ విరూపమేం అంతర్బహిష్టం చ పురే స్తనోదీ దుఃఖం సుఖం వ్యతిరిక్తం చ తీవ్రం కాలోపవన్నం భ్రమా వినక్తి ఆలింగ్యమాయ రచితాంతరాత్మా స్వదేహినం సంస్మృతి చక్రగూడా తావానయం వ్యవహార సదావి క్షేత్రజ్ఞ సాక్షో భగవతి స్థూల భవతి స్థూల సూక్ష్మం తస్మాత్మనో లింగమో లింగమదో వదంతి గుణాగుణత్వస్య పరావరస్యాం గుణానురక్తం వ్యసనాయ జన్మో క్షేమాయ నైర్గుణ్యమధో మనస్యాల్ యథా ప్రదీపో గృహవర్తిమశ్నన్ శిఖా సధూమాం భజతి హ్యన్యదా స్వం పదం తథా గుణకర్మానుబద్ధం వృత్తిర్మనశ్రయవేన్యత్ర తత్వం ఏకాదశాసన్ మనసో హివృత్తయం ఆగోదయ పంచదయోభిమానం మాత్రాని కర్మాణి పురం జతాసాం వదంది ఐకాదశ వీరభూమి గంధాకృతి స్పర్శరసశ్రహాంసి విసర్గత్యర్తిజల్పశల్పాః ఏకాదశం స్వీకరణం మమేది శయ్యామహం ద్వాదశమేకమాహూం ద్రవ్యస్వభావాశయ కర్మకాలే ఏకాదశామీ మనసో వికారం సహస్రశ శతశ కోటిశశ్చ క్షేత్రజ్ఞో నమిథో నస్వదస్యూన్ క్షేత్రజ్ఞమేదా మనసో విభూతి జీవస్య మాయారజితస్య నిత్యాం ఆవిర్హితాం క్వాపి తిరోహితాశ్చ శుద్ధో వినేష్ట అవిశుద్ధకర్తూన్ క్షేత్రజ్ఞమాత్మా పురుష పురాణం సాక్షాత్ స్వయం జ్యోతిరజపరేష నారాయణో భగవాన్ వాసుదేవ సమాయాత్మన్యవధీయమానాం యః నిలస్థావర జంగమానాం ఆత్మస్వరూపే ఆత్మస్వరూపేణ నిమిష్టమీశాల్ ఈశేల్ ఏవంబరో భగవాన్ వాసుదేవ క్షేత్రజ్ఞమాత్మే దమను ప్రవిష్టాః. మయావేదాంతన భృంగరేంద్ర విధూయమాయాం వైనోదయేన విముక్త సంగోదశల్సదత్తో వేదాత్మనత్వం భ్రమదీహదావల్ మయావేదన్మయినాత్మలింగం సంసారరాభావమనం జనస్య యచ్చోగమోహామయరాగలోభం వైరానుబంధం మమతాం విదతే భ్రాతృవ్యమేనం తదదభ్రవీర్యం ఉపేక్షయాధ్యేతి నమ ప్రమత్త గురోహరేశ్చరణోపాసనాస్త్రో యహివ్యలీగం స్వయమాత్మమోషం. శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాపురాణే పంచమస్కందే బ్రాహ్మణ రఘుగణ సంవాదే ఏకాదశోధ్యాయ శ్రీ రఘుగణవాచ నమో నమకారణ విగ్రహాయ స్వరూప రుచీకృత విగ్రహాయ నమో వధూరద్విజబంబిలింగం నిగూఢ నిత్యానుభవాయ దుభ్యం జరామయార్థస్యేదాగదంసం నిధాగదర్థస్య దధాహి మాంభ కదేహమానాహి విదష్ట దృష్టేర్ బ్రహ్మన్ భజస్తే మృతమౌషధం మే తస్మాద్భవందం మమ సంశయార్థం ప్రక్ష్యామి పశ్చాదధునా సుబోధం ఆధ్యాత్మయోగగ్రదినం తమోక్తం ఆఖ్యాహి కౌతూహల చేతసో మే యదాహ యోగేశ్వర దృశ్యమానం క్రియాఫలం సద్వ్యవహార మూలం మహ్యంజసా తత్వవిమర్శనాయం భవానముష్మిన్ భ్రమదే మనో మే. బ్రాహ్మణో వాచా అయం జనో నామ చలన్ పృథివ్యాం యపార్థివ పార్థివ కస్య హేదో తస్యాపి జాంఘ్రోరదిగుల్భజంఘాం జానూరు మధ్యో అశిధోదర అశిధో అశిరోధరాంసాం అసేది సర్వీషు విరాజయస్యాం సౌవీరాజేత్యవదేశమాస్తే యస్మిన్ భవాన్ రూఢ నిజాభిమానో రాజాస్మి సింధుష్వతి దుర్మదాంధ శోచ్యాని మాంసం అధిగష్టదీనాన్ వృష్ట్యాదిగృహోసి జనస్య గోప్తాస్మి వికథమానో నశోభసే వృద్ధసభాసు దృష్టాః యదాక్షిదావే వజరాజస్య విదామనిష్టాం ప్రభవం చ నిత్యం తన్నామ నోన్యల్ వ్యవహార మూలం నిరూప్యనాం సల్క్రియయానుమేయం ఏవం నిరుక్తం శనిశబ్దవృత్తం అసన్నిధానాల్ పరమానవోయే అవిద్యయా మనసా కల్పితాస్తే ఏషాం సమూహేన కృతో విశేషాం ఏవం కృషణం స్థూలమనోర్బృహద్యం అసత్య సజీవమజీవమన్యల్ ద్రవ్యస్వభావాశయకాలకర్మం నామ్నో జయావేహి కృతం ద్వితీయం జ్ఞానం విశుద్ధం పరమార్థమేకం అనందనం తు బ్రహ్మ సత్యం ప్రత్యక్ ప్రశాంతం భగవల్ ఛంద సంయం యద్వాసుదేవం కవయో వదంది రఘుగణైత తపసానయాది నై జయానురూపణాగృహాద్వా నందసా నైవ జలాగ్నిసూర్యర్ వినా మహల్పాల రజోభిషేకం యత్రోత్తమశ్లోకగుణానువాదం ప్రస్తూయతే గ్రామ్యకథావిఖాద నిషయ్యమానోరుదినం ముముక్షో మదిం సదీం యచ్చతి వాసుదేవే అహం విరోభరదో నామ రాజా విముక్తదృష్టశ్రుత సంగబంధాః ఆరాధనం భగవదమిహమానో మృగోభవం మృగసంఘాధనార్థాః సమామృతస్మృతమృగదేహేపి వీర కృష్ణార్చన ప్రభవో నో జహాది అథోమహం జనసంగాదసంగో విషంగమానో వివృతశ్చరామి తస్మాన్నరోసంగ సుసంగజాలం జ్ఞానాసినేహే వివృత్నమోహ హరిం తదీహా కథన శ్రుతాభ్యాం లబ్ధస్మృతమయా తది పారమధ్వనాం. శ్రీమద్భాగవతే మహాబ్రాహ్మణే పంచమస్కందే బ్రాహ్మణ రఘుగణ సంవాదే ద్వాదశోధ్యాయ శ్రీ బ్రాహ్మణోవాచాం దురత్రయ్యజయాదివేశిలో రజస్తమస్సత్వ విభక్త కర్మద స ఏష సార్థోర్థ పర పరిభ్రమన్ భవాడమిం యాదిన శర్మ విందది యస్యామి మే షన్నరదేవదస్య వా సార్థం విలంబంది కునాయకం బలాల్ గోమాయవో యత్ర హరంది సార్థియం ప్రవర్తమా విషయ ధోరణం మృగాః ప్రభూత వీరుత్రణ గులూగహురే क्वचिच्च शीतादपवाल वर्षं प्रतिक्रियां कर्तुमनीशमास्ते क्वचिन्मिदो विपणं यच्च किञ्चिल् विद्वेषमर्चत्युदवित्तशाढ्याल् क्वचिल् क्वचिल् क्षीणमनस्तु तस्मिन् शय्यासनस्थानविहारहीनं याचन्पराद प्रतिलब्धनाम पारक्यदृष्टिर् लभदेवमानम् अन्योन्यवित्तविदिषङ्गवृद्धं वैरानुबन्धो व्यूहन्मिथश्च अध्वन्यमुष्टिन्नुरिकृच्छ्रवित्तं बाधोपसर्गैर् विहरन् विपन्नाम् तांस्तान् विपन्नान् सहितत्र तत्र विहाय जातं परिगृह्य सार्थ आवर्तदेद्याविन कश्चिदत्र वीराध्वनपारमुपैनियोगम् मनस्सिनो निर्जितनृगजेन्द्र ममेदि सर्वे भूविबद्धवैर मृते शैरन् तद्व्रजन्ति यन्न्यस्तदण्डो गतवैरोभियादि ിരിഗന്ധരേലീംഗൃഹീത്വാജപീതമാസ്തിദാഃ അധ കടഞ്ചൽ സമയമുക്തമാഭദം പുനശ്ച സാർത്ഥം പ്രവിശത്തി അരിന്ദമ അധ്വന്യ മുഷ്ടി നജയാ നിവേശിതോ ഭ്രമഞ്ജനോദ്യാവിനവേദകശ്ചനാം രഹുഗണത്വമവിഹദ്വദൻ അധ്വന്യോസ്യ സന്യസ്തദന്ന കളഭൂതമൈത്ര അസജ്ജിതാത്മാ ഹരിസേവയാശിനം ജ്ഞാനാസിമാദായ തരാദിവാരം ശ്രീരാജോവാചാം അഹോ ന ജന്മാഖില ജന്മശോഭനം കിം ജന്മവിസ്തവരൈരപ്യമുഷ്ടിൻ ഇന്ന യദൃശീ കേശയശ ഋദൃശീകേശേഷകൃതാത്മന മഹാത്മനാം പ്രജല സമാഗമാം നഹ്യൽബുദം ദുച്ചരണാംബുജയണിബി ഹദാഹസോ ഭക്തിരദോക്ഷ ജയമല മൗഹൂർത്തികാന്ത സൗമാഗമച്ചുമേ ദുസ്തർക്കമൂലോപഹതോ വിവേകാഃ നമോ മഹൽഭ്യോസ്തു നമ ശിശുഭ്യോ നമയ്യോഭ്യോ നമ ആവദുഭ്യ ഏ ബ്രാഹ്മണാഘാമൂതലിംഗം ശരനിദേവ്യ ശ്യോമസ്തുരാജ്ഞാം ശ്രീശുവാചാം ഇത്യേവം ഉത്തരാമാദാസ വൈ ബ്രഹ്മർഷിദാസിന്ധുപദയം ആത്മസതത്വം വിഗുണയത പരാനുഭാവ പരമകാരുണികതയോപദിശ രഹുഗണേനാ സകുരണം സകരുണ അഭിവന്ദിത ചരണ ആപൂർണാർണവ ഇവ നിവൃതകരണോ മ്യാശയോ ധരണമിമാം വിജചാരാം സൗവീരപതി വിശുദന സമവഗത പരമാനാത്മത ആത്മസതത്വം ആത്മന്യ വിദ്യാധ്യാരോപിതാം ച ദേഹാത്മവതി വിസസർജമേവം ഹി നൃപ ഭഗവത് ആശ്രിതാശ്രിതാനുഭാവാം ശ്രീരാജോവാചാം യോഹവാമിഹ ബഹുവിധാ മഹാഭാഗവതം ത്വയാപി തയാവിഹിത പരോക്ഷേണ വജസ ജീവലോകഭവാധ്വാസഹ്യാര്യമനീഷയ കൽപ്പിത വിഷയോ നാന്യസ്യ ഉൽപ്പന്നലോക സമദ്വിഗമ അത തദൈവേതി ദുരവഗമം സമവേദാനുകൽപ്പേനം നിർദ്ദിശ്യതാമിതി ശ്രീമത്ഭാഗവതി മഹാപുരാണേ പഞ്ചമസ്കന്ദേ ത്രയോദശോധ്യായം. സോ ദർ ഇസ് വൺ മോർ ചാപ്റ്റർ ആൻഡ് ദാറ്റ് ഫിനിഷസ് ദി എക്സ്പ്ലനേഷൻ ഓഫ് ദി ലാസ്റ്റ് ചാപ്റ്റർ വിച്ച് പരീക്ഷിത് മഹാരാജ് ഗിവ്സ് ടു which Shukadev Goswami gives to Parishad Maya. Sahovajam Esha Dehaatmamaninam Sattvadi Gunavishesha Galpita Kushala Kushala Samavahara Vinirmida Vivitha Dehavali Dehavali Paru Vyoga Samyoga Adhyanadi Samsara Anubhavasya Dwarabhudena Shadiddiya Vargena Rasmin Durga Adhoda Sugame Dhvanyavadida Ishwarasya Bhagavado Vishnu Varsha Varti Niyamayam Jiva Lokoyam Yathavanik Sarthorthavaram Sudeha Nishpadi Karma Anubhavam Shmashanavada Shivamayam Samsara Anubhyam Gado വിമല പ്രഭു പ്രതിയോഗേ ഹസ്താതാപോപശമനീം ഹരിഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദം അതുവരാനുപദ വിമരുന്ദേ യസ്യാമുഹവാ ഏതേ ഷഡിന്ദ്രിയമന ഇന്ദ്രിയനാമാനം കർമ്മനോദസ്യോമേവതേ തദ്ധ്യതാ പുരുഷസ്യ ധനം യൽക്കിഞ്ചിത് ധർമ്മോപൈകം ഭൂകൃച്ഛാധികടം സാക്ഷാൽ പരമപുരുഷാരാധന ലക്ഷണോയോസോ ധർമ്മസ്തന്തു സാമ്പ്രായം ഉദാഹരന്തി നിർധർമ്മ്യം ധനം ദർശന സ്പർശന ശ്രവണ ശ്രവണാസ്വാദന ഘാണ സങ്കല്പ വ്യവസായ ഗ്രഹഗാമ്യോപഭോഗേന കുനാഥസ്യാചിതാത്മനോ യഥാ സ്വാർത്ഥസ്യ വിലംബന്തി അതന്റെ എത്ര കൗടുംബിക ധാരാപത്യാദയോ നാംനാം കർമ്മണ മൃഗസാകാല മൃഗസൃകാലാമേവാനിച്ഛതോവി കടേജസ കുടുംബിനം ഉരണക വത്സ സംരക്ഷ്യമാണ മിഷതോ വിഹരന്തി യഥാഹിനു വത്സരം കൃഷ്യമാണ ഒക്കെ ബീജം ക്ഷേത്രം പുനരേവാപനകാലേ ഗുൽമത്രണവീവിർഗുഹരമിവ ഭവത്യേവമേവ ഗൃഹാശ്രമ കർമ്മക്ഷേത്രം യസ്മിന്നഹി കർമ്മന്യുത്സീതന്നേ യദയം കാമഗ്രന്ഥമേഷമ ആവസതാം തത്ര ഗതോദംശം അംശക സമാവസതേർമനുജൈ ശലപദശ കുന്ദനസ്കരമുഷകാദ്വി മുഷകാതിരുപരുധ്യമാന ബഹിപ്രാണക്വചിൽ പരിവർത്തമാനോ അസ്മിൻ മധ്വന്യം വിദ്യാകാമകർമ്മഭി ഉപരക്തമനസാനുപമന്നാർത്ഥം നരലോകം ഗന്ധർവനഗരം ഉപമന്നമിതി മിഥ്യാദൃഷ്ടിനനുപശ്യതി തത്ര ക്വചിത കുചിരാതബോധകനുഭാൻ വിഷയാനുപദാവതി പാനഭോജന വ്യവസായ വ്യവായാദി വ്യസന ലോലുപഹ ക്വചിച്ചാശേഷദോഷം ശതനം പുരീഷ വിശേഷം തദ്വർണ ഗുണനിർമ്മിതമതി സുവർണ ഉപാധിത്സത്യഗ്നി കാമകാതം ഇവോൽമുഖ വിശാചം അഥ കടാചിൻ നിവാസം പാനീയദ്രവിണാദ്യനേകാത്മജോപ ഏകാത്മോപജീവന അഭിനിവേശമേതസ്യാം സംസാര അടവ്യാം ഇതസ്തത പരിധാവതി കുതിച്ച വാത്യോപമ്യായം പ്രമലയാരോഹം ആരോപിതസ്ഥൽകാലരജസ രജനീരൂതം വിവാസാതുമര്യാദോ രജസ്വലാക്ഷോഭി വിദ്ദേവത അതിരജസ്വലമതിർന്ന വിജാനാദി കുതിൽ സകൃതവകത വിഷവൈദഗ്ധ്യം സ്വയം പരാവിജ്ഞാനേന വിഭ്രംശിത സ്മൃതിസ്ഥയൈവ മരീചിതോയപ്രായം സ്ഥാനേവാഭിതാവതി കുതിൽ ദുലൂകജിൽ യസ്വനവതി പുരുഷരവസാടോപം പ്രത്യക്ഷം പരോക്ഷം വാരുപുരാജകുല ദർഭസിനെ ആദിവ്യഥിത കർണമൂല ഹൃദയ സേദാദുഗ്ധപൂർവസ്തുകൃതസ്ഥതാകാരകാരസ്കരകാകുന്ദാദ്യഭ്രുനിദ്രമലതാ വിശോദമനോ ഉപയാത്തശൂന്യം ദ്രവിണാൻ ജീവൻ മൃതാൻ സ്വയം ജീവൻ മൃയമാണോ പദാവതി ഏകദാസ അല്പസംഗാന്നികളമതിസ്രോതസ്കലനവൽ ഉപയതോ വിദുഖതം പാകന്നമഭിയാദി യഥാതു പരമാദയാന്ധമാത്മനേനോ വനമതി തദാർഹി പിതുപുത്ര ബർഹിഷ്മത പിതുപുത്രാൻ വാസ ഖലുപക്ഷേദി കുചിദാസാതിഗ്രഹം ഭാവവൽ പ്രിയാത്ത വിദുരമസുഖോതർക്കം ശോകാദിനാർഹ്യമാനോ ഭൃഷം നിർവേദമവഗച്ഛതി കുചിൽ കാലവിഷമിതം കുചിൽ കാലം ക്വചിൽ കാല വിഷമിതം രാജകുലരക്ഷസാപകൃത പ്രിയത മധുനാസു പ്രമുദമിവ വികല ജീവലക്ഷണമാസ്തേ കഥാചിൻ മനോരഥോപകത പിതൃപിതാ മഹാദ്യസൽസദിതി സ്വപ്ന നിർവൃതിലക്ഷണം അനുഭവതി ക്വചിൽ ഗൃഹാശ്രമ കർമ്മചോദനാദി ഭരഗിരിമാരുരുക്ഷമാണ് ലോകവ്യസന കർശനമാനം കണ്ടകശർക്കരാക്ഷേത്രം പ്രവിശൻ നിവസീതതി കുചിച്ച ദുസഹേനകായാഭ്യന്തരമതിനാം ഗൃഹീത സാരം സ കുടുംബായ ക്രുധ്യതി സ ഏവ പുനർനിദ്രാജകരൻ ഗൃഹീതോന്ധി തമസി മഗ്നശൂന്യാരണ്യം ഇവ ശൈലേ നാന്യൽ കിഞ്ചന വേദം ശിവ ഇവാപവിദ്ധ കഥാചിൽ ഭഗ്നമാനദംഷ്ടോ ദുർജനന്ദശോകേ അലബ്ധനിദ്രാക്ഷണോപിത് ഹൃദയേനാനുക്ഷീയമാണ് വിജ്ഞാനോന്ധകൂപേ അന്ധവൽപദതി കർഹി സ്മചിത് കാമമധുലവാൻ വിചിന്യൻ യഥാ പരതാര പരദ്രവ്യാൻ ഔരുന്ധാനോ രാജ്ഞ സ്വാമി ഭ്രുവാനിഹര പദത്യവാരേന്ദ്രേയും അഥ ചതസ്മാ ഉഭയദാഭിഹി കർമാസ്മിന്നാത്മനം സംസാരാമുപന ഉദാഹരന്തി മുക്തസ്തതോ യദി ബന്ധവാദേവദത്തം ഉപാച്ഛിനത്തി തസ്മാദപി വിഷ്ണുമിത്ര ഇത്യനവസ്ഥിതി ക്വചിച്ചാശീതാവാദ്യേകാധി ദൈവിക ഭൗതികാത്മീയാനാം ദശാനാം പ്രതിനിവാരണേ കൽപ്പോ ദുരന്ത ചിന്തയാ വിഷണ്ണമാസ്തേയും ക്വചിൻ മിതോ വ്യവഹരൻ യത് കിഞ്ചിത് ധനമനേഭ്യോ വാം കാഗ്നി വാം മാത്രം വ്യവഹരൻ യത് കിഞ്ചിത് വാം വിദ്വേഷമേതി വിത്തഷഢ്യാൽ വിത്തശാഠ്യാൽ അധ്യന്യമുഷ്മിനോസർഗാസ്തദാസുഖദുഃഖരാഗദ്വേഷഭയാഭിമാനം പ്രമോദോന്മാദശോകമോഹലോഭം ആത്സര്യ ഈഷ്യ അവമാന ക്ഷുൽ പിപാസാദി വ്യാധി ജന്മ ജരാ മരണാദേഹാം കോപി ദേവമായയാ സ്ത്രീയ ഉജലലോഭകൂടം പ്രസ്കന്ന വിവേക വിജ്ഞാനം യദ്വിഹാരഗൃഹാരംഭാകുലം ഹൃദയസ്ഥദാശ്രയാവസക്തസ്തുത ദുഹിതൃക്കളത്ര ഭാഷിതാവലോക വിജയിഷ്ഠിത അപഹൃത ഹൃദയ ആത്മാനമജിതാത്മാവാരേന്ധേ തമസി പ്രഹിണോതി കഥാചിൽ ഈശ്വരസ്യ ഭഗവോ വിഷ്ണുശ്ചക്രാൽ പരമാന്വാദി ദ്വിപരാർത്ഥാവ അപവർഗകാലോപലക്ഷണാൽ പരിവർത്തിതേന വയസാരംഹസാഹരദം ആ ബ്രഹ്മതൃണ സ്തംഭാദീനാം ഭൂതാനാം അനിമിഷദോംശതാം വിത്രസ്തഹൃദയസ്തമവീശ്വരം കാലചക്രനിചായുധം സാക്ഷാൽ ഭഗവന്തം യജ്ഞപുരുഷമനാം കൃത്യഭാഗണ്ഡദേവത കങ്കഗ്രധ്ര ഭഗവടപ്രായം ആര്യസമയ പരിഹൃത സാങ്കേത്യേന അഭിതത്തെയും യഥാ പാങ്കണ്ഡേയാത്മവഞ്ജിതൈ സൈരുപഞ്ചിതോ ബ്രഹ്മകുലം സമാവസം സ്തേഷാം ശീലമുപനയനാദി ശ്രൗതസ്മാർത്ഥ കർമാനുഷ്ഠാനേന ഭഗവതോ യജ്ഞപുരുഷസ്യ ആരാധനമേവ തദരോചയൻ ശൂദ്രകുലം ഭജതെ നിഗമാചാരേ ശുചിതോയസ്യ മിഥുനീഭാവ കുടുംബഭരണം യഥാ വാനരജാദേഹി തത്രാവി നിരവരോധസ്വൈരേണ വിഹരന്മതിക്രമണ ബുദ്ധിരന്യൂന്യം ഉപനിരീക്ഷണാദിനാംഗ്രാമി കർമ്മണൈവ വിസ്മൃത കാലാവധി ക്വചിൽ ദ്രുമദേഹികാർത്തേഷു ഗൃഹേഷു ഹംസിന് യഥാവാനൻ സുതതാര വത്സലോ വ്യവസായ ക്ഷണ ഏവ മധ്വന്യ വിരുന്ധാനോ മൃത്യുഗജ ഭയാർത്ഥമസി ഗിരികന്ധര പ്രായേ ക്വചി ചീതവാദാദ്യനേക ദൈവിക ഭൗതികാത്മീയാനാം ദുഃഖാനാം പ്രതിനിവാരണേ കൽപ്പോ ദുരന്ത വിഷയവഷണ്ണമാസ്തേയും ക്വചിൽ മിതോ വിവരന്യൽ കിഞ്ചിത് ധനോപയാദി വിത്തശാഠ്യേന ക്വചിൽ ക്ഷീണധനശയ്യാസനാ ശയ്യാസനാശനാത് ഉപഭോഗവിഹീനോയാവത് പ്രതിലബ്ധ മനോരഥോപഗതാദീനവസിതമതി സ്തതസ്തതോമാനാം ദീനി ജനത ജനാധവിരപതിം ഏവം മെത്തു വിദുഷംഗ വിരുദ്ധ വൈരാനുബന്ധോപി പൂർവവാസനയാമിതം ഉദ്വഹത്യവാഭവഹരീം ഏതസ്മിൻ സംസാരാധ്വനി നാനാക്ലേശോപസർഗബാധിതം ആപന്ന വിപന്നോ യത്ര യസ്തമുഹവാവേദരസ്തത്ര വിസൃജ്യ ജാതം ജാതം ഉപാദായശോ ജന്മുഹ്യൻ ബിഭ്യദ്വിം ദുംവദൻ ക്രന്ദൻ സംഹൃഷ്യൻ ഗായൻ നഹ്യമാനം സാധുവർജിതോ നൈവ ആവർത്തതേദ്യാപി യഥമാരബ്ധമേഷ നരലോകസാർത്ഥോയമധ്വന പാരമുപതിശന്തിം ഇതിനം യോഗാനുശാസനം നവ ഏതാദവരുന്ധനെ എന്യസ്തദണ്ഡോമനെ ഉപശമശീല ഉപരാത്മാനം സമവഗച്ഛന്തി യതി ദീപജൈനോ ദീപജൈനോ യജ്ജിനോ യോ വൈ രാജർഷയ കിന്തു പരമൃതി ശൈരൻ അന്നസ്യാമേവമേ മെനി കൃതവൈരാനുബന്ധായാം വിസൃജ്യ സ്വയം ഉപസംഹൃതാഹ കർമ്മവല്ലീമവലംബ്യ തത ആപദമടകിഞ്ചന കഥ കഥഞ്ചിന്നരകാദ്വിമുക്ത പുനരപ്യവം സംസാരാധ്വനി വർത്തമാനോ നരലോകസ്വാർത്ഥമുപയാതി ഏവമുപതിഗതോപി തസ്യേതമുപഗായന്തി ആർഷവസ്യഹരാജനഷേർ മനസാമ്യൂഹാത്മന നാനോർമാഹൃതി നിർഭോ ക്ഷിജേവഗതാത്മത യോസ്തി ജന്താരസുരൻ സോദ്രാജ്യം ഹൃതി സ്പൃശ ജഹോ യുവൈവ മലവ ഉത്തമ ശ്ലോകലാലസാം യോസ്തി ജാൻ ക്ഷിതിജുസുതസ്സു ജനാർത്ഥധാരാൻ പ്രാർത്ഥ്യാം ശ്രിയം സുരവരെ സദയാവലോകം നൈച്ചം നൃപസ്തുതിജിതം മഹതാം മതിദ്വിൽ സേവാൻ വ്യക്തമനസോ അപവോ വിഭൽഗോം യജ്ഞായ ധർമ്മപതിയെ വിധി നൈപുണായ യോഗായ സാംഗിശരസേ പ്രകൃതീശ്വരായ നാരായണായ ഹരേ നമൈത്യനാരം ഹാസിൻമൃഗത്വമിയ സമുദാജഹാരാം ഇതം ഭാഗവത സമാഹിതാവത സഭാജിതാവതാത് ഗുണകർമ്മണോ രാജർഷേഭരസ്യ അനുചരിതം സ്വസ്തേനം സ്വസ്തേനമായുഷം ധന്യം യശസ്യം സ്വർഗ്യാവവർഗ്യം മാനു ശണോത്യാഖ്യാസിത്യഭിനന്ദതി ച സർവ ഏവാശിഷമാത്മനമാശാസ്തേന കാഞ്ചന പരവൈദീ ഈശ്വൽഭാഗവതേ മഹാപ്രാണേ പഞ്ചമസ്കന്ദേ ഭരതോപാഖ്യാനേ പാരോക്ഷവേരണം നാമ ചതുർദ്ദശോധ്യായാം സോ That is the end of Bharata Maharaj story in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And after this, from the next chapter, begins successive kings who came after Bharata Maharaj. There is a brief description in the next chapter. And then it goes on to the description of the universe. And that universe, what is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is a what Sri Shugan is seeing from his own eyes, through his own eyes, what he is seeing, that is what he has described here. So if you look into the description of the universe here, it won't match with the universe what scientists has given us. That's a little different universe than this what's mentioned here. So, but it's important to go through the description of the universe because Sukadeva Goswami or Sri Shugan in his description here, he is not discussing we saw earlier Jambudvipam. Jambudvipam has got divided into 9 different sectors by Agneya, and then he handed over to different kings, and Nabi got the Bharatavarsham. But similarly, we had other areas mentioned there, like when the middle is Ilavrata Varsham and so many other Varshas mentioned. So here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while discussing this, what you will notice there is that they are generally talking about that who is worshipped, which form of Krishna is worshipped in these different locations or in these different areas in this creation, in this Jambudvipam. Jambudvipam is the planet where we live, and this is what is divided into this 9 different areas, 9 different sectors, and majority of them is not visible to us, because the reason for that is that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where description is given, they discuss that part of the creation which is not visible to our naked eye, and we see everything from our naked eye, and because of our conditioning, we tend to think that what we see through our eyes what we see through our eyes as the only reality, but that's what's explained in these next few chapters, which we'll read through in the next Sunday. But if there is any questions or comments, please.
For these different planets, right, that we don't see with the physical eyes, can you give us someone, I know, to read, and I know you'll be going through the next week, right?
Yeah.
Can you give us maybe a general description of that, or is that possible?
We talked about it before also, that in the Shrimad Bhagavatam, this Bhugolam, or in other words, this planet what we live, what is seen by us is only a part of it, in of the actual what there exists. Priyavrata, who was the Swayambhu Manu's eldest son, when he drove the chariot in the around the sun, around this earthly planet, seven seas and seven islands were created. That is mentioned there. The seven seas and the Jambu, Praksham, Shalmari, Kraunjam, Shagaram, Pushkaram. Like that, the seven islands were created. And seven different kinds of seas. That means you have one island and one sea surrounding that. Then another island, another sea surrounding that. That is how that whole cluster of earth exists in the creation. Now, Priyavrata created these seven islands and the seven seas. All of them are not visible to us. What we see is, right in the middle of that is Jambudvipam, and that is this earthly planet. And even in this earthly planet, we haven't got a full vision of everything, what we see in the pictures. Because there, it says in the next coming chapters, that Jambudvipam, in the middle, there is Ilavradavasham, which is Lord Shiva's abode. Surrounding that, there are three in the north, three in the south, one on either side. That means totally, when it was divided by Agnidra, that is Priyavrata's son, he divided in such a way, Nabhi got Bharatavarsham. Bharata belongs to Nabhi, and it was known as Ajanavam at that time. And Ajanavam had to take a different name after this King Bharata, whom we were discussing today. After he ruled Ajanavam, that became Bharatavarsha, as today is known as Bharatavarsha. So, the importance of that was that Sudeva Goswami was discussing the creation with Parikshit Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj wanted to know more about this Jambudvipam, where we are living today. So, it is at that point that he starts discussing the different areas in this Jambudvipam itself. Who is worshipped in which location, and there is a lot of things mentioned about it. In the coming four or five chapters, it goes discussing the different parts of Jambudvipam. But ultimately, it says there about the importance of Bharatavarsha. Bharatavarsha's special position is mentioned there. And that makes it also able to understand that the Bharatavarsha's special position is that in different areas, for example, in Ilavradavarsham, Lord Shiva is worshipped there. And in Iranmayam, Hiranmayam and Kedamalam on the north, Harivarsham, Kimburisham, Ilavarsham on the south, and then Badrasham and Kedamalam on either side. That is how the total area is divided. And in all these, different aspects of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped. So, Shishukan says to Parikshit, who is being worshipped? Who is worshipping him? And what do they sing? What glories do they sing there? These are the next few chapters it goes on. And eventually he talks about the importance of Bharatavarsha. Bharatavarsha's importance is that it says there that everything in the land of Bharatavarsham has a significance because it has some relationship with the Supreme Lord. There is nothing in Bharatavarsham which hasn't got a history dating back to the spiritual life. In everything, every river, every mountain, every dust it says in that part of the land has some significance in relationship with Krishna consciousness. So that's what makes it more important. And then he talks about who is being worshipped there and how it's worshipped and all that, which I'll cover next time.
You said, with the sword of knowledge, It has to be sharpened by upasana and sadhana.
Sadhana, yes, it's the same.
Now,
yeah.
At the time of death, this sword of knowledge, is it necessary at that point to remember?
Yeah, this sword of knowledge will only work if there is upasana. Otherwise, it won't act. You may have studied all the books, but it won't do its duty, what it is meant to do, unless you have practiced it throughout life. So, otherwise, it's only good to tell others what to do. That's all you can do with it. You can tell everybody else what you should do, and then you can do what you like, but that is no use, it's useless. That's what Bhagavan says. That when I say, Janavarada is saying to, like many of us do, isn't it? We all do the same thing. Tell everybody else what they have to do. When it comes to us doing it, then we are a little bit behind. So, same thing, that unless we practice it, like what Srila Prabhupada has told us, chant Hare Krishna. That's the simplest thing, what Prabhupada's instruction is. Unless we chant all the time and make that a habit in our own life, it will not happen at the time of death. It will not happen. It will not protect us. All this is good to talk, though you chant 16 rounds, you have chanted 32 rounds. Well, that's no good. But actually what Prabhupada expects us all to do, like Prabhupada used to do himself, was to chant Hare Krishna all the time. If you cannot chant loudly, at least you should chant in your mind all the time. When you are traveling, when you are, give up all the frivolous activities like television and other things and simply chant all the name. Because it is a simple process, but unless and until we follow it, there is no success guaranteed from that. But if you chant like that, you go see in Vrindavan and many places you can see some old people always chanting. They're always chanting, walking on all the lips you can see moving. But that habit has to become a habit. So the knowledge what one has got from Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam is the essence of chanting the holy name. That's a message which comes through Bhagavatam. Nama Sangirtanam Yasya Sarva Bhava Pranashanam. At the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Bhagavatam was recited in Haridwar third time, Krishna came there with all the devotees to the scene. All the devotees. Who are all with him? Sri Narada Muni, Uddhava, Prahlada, Mahabali. All the great devotees from Vaikuntha planet joined Krishna and came there to see what the saptaham of the 7 days of discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam by Sanal Kumara Maharshi and the sages present there. So in that meeting, Krishna asked them, what do you want me to do? He asked them, what do you want from me? They told him that we want to always want to chant your name, the holy name. Because sometimes, we will see that in the sixth canto when Ajamila story is discussed, how powerful this holy name is if it is chanted properly all the time. It can change everything in life, not only spiritual life, even material life will change to a large degree if one develops that habit of chanting the holy name. So there Krishna asked this question to the sages present there, and their answer was that bhave bhave yadha bhakti padayor stava jayade tada kurushva devesha nadastvam no yada prabho. Then the last verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam is this. Nama Sangirtanam Yasya. All the time we want to chant your holy name. This is the beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam. All the other Vedic literature will tell you that you want to get liberated at the end and go back to the spiritual world. Bhagavatam doesn't say that. Bhagavatam says, Nama Sangirtanam Yasya Sarvabhava Pranashanam. That it kills away all our sinful activities, sinful reactions of our sinful life, whatever is in storage. Today we can say, I have not done anything sinful in my life, I am so pure. But that is not, that's our statement. Krishna knows how much is in storage. Each one of us have behind us in the account. Nama Sangirtanam Yasya Sarva Bhava Pranashanam. Because sinful life is why we have this material body. That's why we have been sent here in this condition and made us to suffer in one way or the other. Sarva Bhava Pranashanam Pranamo Dukkha Shamanam. The result of that is distress goes away. Tam Namami Harim Param. Therefore we surrender unto you. And Krishna blessed the audience who are present there with all the sages that if you chant, if you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, automatically you will be encouraged to chant Krishna's holy name, Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So that is the benefit from that automatically one should chant the holy name as much as one can in all circumstances. And whether the chanting is doing good or not, that we have to see later on when we come to Ajamila's story. There everything is discussed in detail. What kind of chanting, how one chants, what is the benefit from chanting in the bad way, in the good way, all these things are discussed in that sixth canto. in the Jamila story. That will just look at it then. So that's the message.
If you have a tendency to chant because you want to be liberated, how can you move to another stage where that isn't your mission for the reason why you chant?
The desire for liberation is in the beginning. After a while, when you are chanting the holy name, Krishna's holy name, all the Goswamis have certified this, that the desire for liberation becomes less significant because it has no value anymore. Desire, the liberation is automatically happens to a devotee who has chanted the holy name. He is sheltered from taking another body again. That is the guarantee from Krishna. That it is rarely that if one has chanted the holy name and perfected in one's own life by chanting process, then he do not have to worry about liberation. Liberation Krishna gives to everybody. Liberation is not a big thing in this life. That is what in the earlier chapters we saw. Rajan Badar Guru Nalam Bhavadam Yadunam. That when Parikshit Maharaj got the same doubt, when he was thinking that when all these sinful activities were discussed, Parikshit Maharaj taught himself that I've come back now after doing a wonderful thing, what I have done, taken this dead snake and put it on the sage's neck. And now I'm sitting here waiting for Tathagata to come. So in that fearful mood he was sitting there. And when he heard about Maharaj Rishabhadev's story, immediately he thought, oh, at least if I was present there at the time when Rishabhadev gave up the body, I could have escaped from this. I wasn't present there either. So he was lamenting about that. At that time, Sri Shukan says to Parikshit, Parikshit, my dear king, this liberation is not a big deal. That's how he puts it there in the Bhagavatam. Rajan Badar Gurulam Bhavadam Yadunam. And there is a long explanation to that. That the who is Krishna? After all, he asked Parikshit Maharaj, who is Krishna for you? What is your relationship with Krishna? Have you thought about it? He said like this. He said, Devam Priya Kulabadi Koja Kingaranam. That this Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what was he after all? Sometimes he was acting as though he is the agent of Dhritarashtra, Dharmaputra or Yudhishthira Maharaj. He was acting in that way. Sometimes he was acting as though he is his manager or he was doing all management work for Maharaj Dhritarashtra. As you see the sacrifice in so many instances, this is exactly what service Krishna has done to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Some other instance, what did he do? He went to Dhritarashtra to negotiate peace on behalf of the Pandavas. He did that, didn't he? He did that. So sometimes he was acting like a manager, sometimes he was acting like a representative. So then he says, I do not understand what Krishna or what all he wanted to do for the Pandavas. And then he says, take for example Arjuna, your own grandfather, what did he do to him? Arjuna, at one stage, he explained Bhagavad Gita to him. Otherwise, other times he was driving his chariot, he was driving Arjuna in the chariot. And in another instance, he realized that he can drive Arjuna himself, not only the chariot, Arjuna also he can drive. That's what he did through Bhagavad Gita, he drove Arjuna in the right direction. Like this, Krishna has done so much to the Pandavas at different instances. Don't you see that? He said to Parikshit. Parikshit Maharaj realized that this thing called bhakti is a far higher situation than mukti. Mukti, he says, Krishna will give to everybody without even looking at one's face. That's what he did to Pudana. When Pudana came, Krishna kept his eyes closed and handed her liberation to her. Sent her back to the spiritual world where Mother Yashoda is there. He didn't think too much about it. But before giving devotion to anybody, Krishna thinks 10 times. Why? Not that it's going to cause a lot of problem for Krishna. Not that Krishna doesn't want to do it either. But there's another reason to it. The reason is, once you offer devotion to somebody, Krishna thinks millions of times before he gives devotion to anyone. That is how Krishna's nature is. That is what it says there. Muktim dadadi karhi jils mana bhakti yogam. Mukti he gives liberation without looking at the face. But bhakti he thinks 10 times before he offers it to a person. Why? If you do that, then from the next day onwards, like he did to the Pandavas, he has to go and do all the service to the devotee. that, not that he can't do it, he can do it, but before he does that, he thinks a lot of time. Because if you are looking for liberation, Krishna says you can have it, you don't have to worry about it too much. If you chant Hare Krishna, liberation is already covered in that. But higher than that, the goal of life is not attaining liberation alone, but getting attached to Krishna's lotus feet. That is the higher thing than all this mukti. How many people have got mukti? All the demons who came to heal Krishna, they all got mukti. They all went back to the spiritual world. So, Shri Shivan says to Parikshit, what is so glorious about mukti, he says.
And is it right that there's four types of planets, or is it seven, where liberated people go? I think it covers in the third canto, I'm not sure. But the liberated people, they achieved the Vaikuntha planets, is that right?
Liberation is possible in the spiritual world, which is Vaikuntha planets. All the planets in the spiritual world are Vaikuntha planets. One goes to Vaikuntha planet where there is a possibility of different kinds of liberation one achieves there. One achieves in the different kinds of liberation in the Vaikuntha planets. That is possible, yeah. So depending on the relationship with Krishna, that liberation is achieved by the devotee. That is not something particularly very high, because the pleasure that comes for a devotee in his relationship with Krishna is far, far superior to the pleasure what one derives in liberation. That only you can understand when you hear from the devotees of the greatness of the devotion. So, but at the same time, to get to that level of devotion also takes a lot of time and energy. And Krishna's mercy also. Otherwise, it is not possible.
Yeah, and one more question. Sometimes when you read the Srimad Bhagavatam in a lot of detail, you come to the fact that the Vedic paradigm or point of view sometimes contradicts the scientific one. I'll give an example. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada states somewhere, I don't know exactly in which chapter, that the sun is the only self-illuminating planet in this middle planetary system, that all the other planets we view as stars, according to scientists, are actually planets because they are not self-illuminating.
Mm-hmm.
Because they receive their heat and light from the sun, but not from their own fire qualities. Yeah? And, well, astronomical qualities, that now they are also stars, they can even measure the temperature, even if it's so many light years away, and they say they are also self-illuminating bodies, material bodies. Can you elaborate on that? Because
the
collapses, right?
The thing is this, that you see, the scientists, no doubt, they have developed a lot of instruments to get it. They're taking a lot of photographs, they're sending this vehicles, space vehicles to different planets and trying to photograph from there and bring information from those places. But the difficulty is that none of them can categorically say that what they have calculated and given to us is absolute. None of the information. They cannot say that, because time and again you see, I watch these programs very interestingly, it's interesting to me also. So many times I've noticed that they have succeeded in taking so many photographs of so many constellations and of the stars and all that. But compare that, think about it, that the distance for these stars from this planet, you have to travel something like 40 to 50,000 light years to get there, to see what really going on there. I'm sitting here and thinking that it could be like this, it could be like that. This is how I'm doing it now at the moment. In other words, very much I'm dependent on my speculative power for the knowledge what I'm giving to the people.
So I was thinking, if those stars or planets or whatever they might be, receive the light and heat from the sun, it must be freezing out there. So how can they reflect the light of the sun back?
In Krishna's creation, our logic doesn't work there. In Krishna's creation, there are so many things which you will find difficult to understand. Everything gets its energy from Krishna, not from sun or from the moon. Everything is, in fact, sun planet itself. Why is sun planet illuminating? Scientists are telling us that there is hydrogen and helium, two gases which are burning there, and they even calculated the life of the sun planet. That's the most interesting thing. They're saying that 60,000 years after that, the helium will run out there, apparently. That's why. Now, how do you want to believe that? Can you believe it? I can't believe it. Then, if Krishna could create one planet which can illuminate the whole, one planet, sun planet, and able to illuminate the whole universe, I don't think Krishna is so short of money to buy, put a little bit more helium there to keep it going for a longer period. So this kind of study is from a mental platform to a large degree. And I do not know how to tell the scientists about these things. All I know is that it makes more sense to me that there are so many things in this creation which we can't see and which we don't know. But we know it exists because, as I said before, that Jagrat, Sopnam and Sushupti, vacant state, dream state and deep sleep. In these three states I am moving back and forth. But there is another state existing beyond than that which I am not able to get in. Why? Example, when you think about yourself, that normally I see with my eyes everything, isn't it? But when I am sleeping, I am in a dream state, I am seeing something still. How am I seeing that? Where is my eyes at that time to see that? I am seeing so many things in the sleep, in the dream. But my eyes are closed, but I am still seeing them. So there is something more than what we think, what we are seeing with our naked eyes, exists in this creation. And similarly in the deep sleep, also a different experience altogether. So many times we have to always think that there is something in me which is telling me that something else exists beyond this what eyes have told me or the my senses have given me. So sensual knowledge which is derived through sensual perception or experiments from the Vedic point of view is not right, is not bona fide. They are insisting that the knowledge revealed through by the sages alone is right. Now, to find out all these things, whether it's true or not, that's only possible when you have come out of this material entanglement. And when you are liberated, like the great sages, Narada Muni and so many other personalities, they are able to travel to many, many planetary systems, and which do exist because in the creation we have the misunderstanding that we are the highest living entities, this human life, isn't it? That's the way we are told, that nothing exists beyond us. Sometimes they say, oh, there is some angels and all that they say. But Bhagavatam is saying, you are one of the worms in the creation. That's how Bhagavatam is putting to us. Okay, human life has some benefits, but at the same time, there are higher planetary systems and higher living entities who live a different kind of life than us, who have knowledge at the time of birth. Whereas for us, we have to acquire knowledge. We have to study books. We have to practice things to get the knowledge. But they have, by birth itself, they have the knowledge. Even if you observe the material world, you will see so many things. By nature's arrangement, there are certain potencies and power given to every living entity. For example, look at the birds, they can fly, we can't fly. We don't have, even if you want to fly, we have to develop a mechanism by which we have to fly. And similarly, so many things in this world, you can see everyone has been given a certain potency by Krishna's arrangement. And human society also has been given certain capacity to understand things. But what the Shastra says is that you should not think that with your senses and with your speculative power you will get... One thing is very clear, that no matter how long this research goes on in this laboratory, never we are going to get a complete information on this universe, what we are going to understand. It's happened so many years now, research is going on, and so much money is spent. Prabhupada used to say that a lot of this money is spent just to keep a lot of people on the job, and that's what project management and it keeps them going. You will never get to know the truth by this process. You will get to know the truth. So as much they have a claim for the truth, we also have a claim in that sense. That's all I can say. But to tell them, if everything was so easy to find out the truth, that's why the spiritual process is necessary. The process is such that you practice spiritual life, and one day, by Krishna's grace, when you have reached a higher level of realization, and you are able to travel like the sages, or to planets, or to the other planetary systems, then you realize that there is a higher, different dimension to all than what we have learned through the through the modern science. That's the only way you can deal with it. And like, for example, if you think about it, this human life in this planet, according to the modern science, is only for a certain very few thousand years. Before that, they say there was no life and there was dinosaurs and all that. They keep teaching all of us like this. But from the Puranas, we understand that Ramayana happened something like in about 1.5–2 million years ago. And that is so long, the history is behind it. Similarly, if you look into, even Bhagavad Gita is 5,000 years, already 5,000, that's very clear evidence. And if you tell somebody in the modern world, this particular the scientist, that 5,000 years ago Mahabharata war happened, they will say, no, according to their information, only 3,000 years we have recorded history. Everything else is mythology. They will reject it. They won't accept it. So if the attitude is like that, that they cannot accept any authority on anybody, then it's very difficult. What can you do? You can only we have to always think that in the Shastra what you find, all the sages, their life, their realizations, that is all, a lot of energy has been spent in developing this. Like scientists have developed a lot of new things. The sages have developed the mantra. That's all. Vedic mantras are all which were developed by the sages at different times. And these mantras have shown its potency when it's been properly practiced and properly chanted. So it has its own potency. And even today you can see people are capable of doing that. Some people are trained to do that. And sometimes you also notice there is some agreement on certain things between the science and the Shastra. For example, for us, the creation comes from sound. Shabda Brahma means call. Sound is the origin. From there, creation happened. They also now started saying that we had the Big Bang theory. There was a bang. And from the sound, the creation happened. So somewhere there is some agreement coming from some point. But at the same time, for them to totally accept what Puranas and the Upanishads and the Shastra says will be difficult, because they are engaged in research work. Because they consider themselves to be perfect. This is the problem. That's where the difficulty comes. Whereas we are saying we are not perfect, we have to get the knowledge from the persons who have realized themselves, which is a different approach altogether. For them, they are already perfect. And instruments what they develop is also perfect. So knowledge what they get is also perfect. That's the way they see it. We will never agree each other.
Question was, in fact, what you said just now about the scientist's lack of complete knowledge and the deficiency. Sometimes, about a year ago, actually you mentioned this point.
Yeah.
And the scientists were doing this research on this aspect of the creation of the universe, the origin, and the various forces that are created through this creation of the universe, electromagnetic forces, nuclear forces, and so on. And they were trying to integrate this whole process into one unified theory of creation, and the various equations that were being worked out by various sections of the scientific community in trying to integrate this process so that they could define one unified theory. And the scientists who were working on it apparently came to the conclusion, one or two quite renowned scientists were saying that there is something they find that's missing. They just simply cannot, despite the very complex equation and all the efforts that they made, they still found that there's one factor missing. They just could not bring in, integrate, and produce a theory which unifies as an explanation of the theory of universe, creation. And that unified factor, missing factor, was factor X, some of the scientists called. But one or two other scientists who were quite open in their spiritual aspects and God and so on, they would put it to God factor, X factor, and said, this is the missing factor. If you could know something, that there is a super hand that's around all this. But they are not able to work on it because, as you said, it's in a different plane. And that is the reason why they said they cannot unify it, because that factor X is God, you know, some scientists put it. And unless you go further in the science, in the spiritual arena, we will not find answers to this. And this is the increasing conclusion of many of the scientists now. So they are trying to work on it.
So some scientists will agree, some scientists won't. And there's nothing we can do about it, is it?
Some are humble enough to admit that that factor.
Yeah, but admitting is not enough. Unless they start chanting Hare Krishna, this is all a waste of time. You can keep on discussing X and Y and Z and all factors. What's the use at the end? But they won't do that because they can't accept Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the problem. That's a mythology for them then. Whereas for us it's not mythology. Bhagavadam is not a mythology. It's a history of the Krishna's pastimes in this world at different times in the history. And for a devotee it's not difficult to accept that. And he gets satisfaction from that. He doesn't want to know how many stars are in the sky and don't want to count them. That's not going to help, is it?
So I was going to say that 25 years ago, Srila Prabhupada said that he didn't believe that the American flag was removed.
Yeah.
They demonstrated that it was a hoax. They filmed this in the Nevada Desert.
Yeah.
And two reasons they say. One is that apparently when they filmed the people on the moon, there was wind blowing, and there's meant to be no wind on the moon, so it's in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, when you go more than 178 miles of the Earth's atmosphere, any rocket can burn to ashes, and they didn't have the technology 30 years ago. So this whole coming out with the lies of the West, of the scientists, really. And this is just one example of it.
Yeah. Yes, the moon planet, according to the Vedic literature, is one of the heavenly planets, and there is a lot of activities going on there. So somebody says that there is nothing, probably used to say that probably they are not going to the moon, they are going somewhere else. But it looks to me that these things have no significance much as far as our life is concerned, in the sense that one day we have to leave this world and go. And whether we go to the moon or not go to the moon, it won't make any difference to us when the death comes. At that time, what helps is Krishna's holy name, nothing else. You can discuss it for the sake of discussion, that we have been to the moon, we have been to another planet, now they're going to Mars or they're going to some other places. What is the benefit from all these things at the end? Nothing. Nothing we get out of this. Every planet they visit and they come back and they say that there is no life there, and there is temperature is so high in one planet, another temperature is so low in another planet, and there is only life in this earth. This kind of conclusions are coming through. But intelligence tells me that there is life everywhere. It can't be that there is only life in this planet. But only thing is, the kind of life may be different in that place existing. Therefore, our senses cannot be the judge in these matters. What we perceive through our senses alone cannot be taken into account. There's more to life than that. And so it's better not to spend too much time on looking at moon and sun. Rather we chant Hare Krishna. Okay. Or go to Srila Prabhupada.